All right, our next presenter is Frank Grunstein from, he's the director of sales over at Logitech Systems. His varied career in broadcasting has spanned over 40 years. Since 1993, he has been in broadcast sales, working for Harris Radio Systems and for the past 10 years for Logitech. He has been a major market chief engineer, a video film production facility manager, chief tech of a recording studio, and had a brief stint as a computer animator. He has a master's degree in communications from NYU, and he currently holds SBE certifications as CBRE and CBNT. Please welcome Frank Grunstein.
Thank you. Is this the...
Yeah, and the red button is the one that is forward, this is reverse.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to talk about dense node architecture for IP. Oh, there we go. But first, a little bit of history, because I needed pad. And any operating system architecture which pairs an audio control surface with a DSP-based router or audio engines or nodes is we refer to as a networked audio platform. The first DSP-based network console systems were introduced about 25 years ago. They were introduced simultaneously by Klotz and Logitech. The purpose was to detach the user control part of the audio system from the technical signal processing and routing part of the system. The idea was that when treated separately, each part could be tailored to its own specific needs. Operators could have a range of control surfaces that allowed access to parts of the system that were required for that operation, from simple, straightforward, just get it on the air consoles, to elaborate consoles with access to processing and routing control. While the engineering backbone of the station could have a dense audio matrix capable of supporting small to very large audio infrastructures without being constrained by the physical requirements of the console, routers like consoles have been around for many years before the systems were merged. But few radio stations outside of major markets really had routers. They were very large and expensive, and most single stations didn't really have enough need to justify the cost of an audio router. The introduction of the DSP-based routers brought down the cost of these systems, lowered costs in conjunction with the loosening of station market ownership rules, made these network systems economically justifiable and operationally essential. Now every point in the facility could have access to all the sources in the facility without requiring consoles the size of aircraft carriers or external input routing supported by multiple DAs. The first of these network-based systems were networked together using TDM technology. The physical networking was done on fiber. Logitech's fiber could transport up to 500 uncompressed audio channels. The advantages of TDM, everything was everywhere instantaneously. It's a closed system, and it could not be disrupted by outside forces. It had very low latency, typically in the 50 microsecond ranges. The disadvantages were sources from outside the system were not easily ported into the network. Proprietary audio coding, proprietary control, and the hardware was expensive. The TDM systems were around for about 15 years before another network protocol was introduced, AOIP networking. It was first introduced about 2006 by Axia Audio. AOIP network systems are now available by Logitech, Axia, Wheatstone, AEQ, Lavo, and SAS, and probably more, I just don't know them. Physical networking is done by known Ethernet protocols using commonly available Ethernet switching and cabling. The advantages of AOIP, theoretically unlimited uncompressed audio channels, no central frame, hardware is less expensive. The more open system can be accessed by sources outside the local facility through the public internet. The RTP protocols used allow for the possible interoperability of different systems. There are constant advances in accessibility, speed, and ease of user setup due to the fact that the products are in demand from larger industries. One of the problems that broadcasting has always had was that we're kind of a niche market for everybody. There are 14,000 potential customers in the United States for broadcast products. I have a group of friends that I have back in Philadelphia. We play tennis together. One owns a small ad agency, one owns a print shop, one owns an acoustic consulting firm. Each of those people have more potential customers in the local Philadelphia marketplace than we have across the United States. Consequently, anytime we can leverage a technology from a broader-based industry is going to mean lower costs for our customers. The disadvantages, latency issues in IP systems come from two sources: processing of complex protocols used in IP, transport delay through the network switches. There are practical bandwidth limitations, we still have proprietary control, and we're susceptible to invasion if connected to the public internet. There are many standard IP protocols which are used in AOIP networking. The more of these protocols that are present in a system, the more universally adaptive the system is. Last NAB, the AES adopted a standard for AOIP audio. AES 67 incorporates many of the protocols in an attempt to standardize IP networked audio. AES 67 was developed by a very loose participation of many AOIP developers, and we'll talk more about AES 67 later. Most AOIP systems use RTP protocols for audio. RTP has the advantage of being easy to implement and easy to recognize. Most systems also feature multicasting protocols such as multicast DHCP and multicast DNS, which facilitate source recognition and labeling. These protocols allow for broadcasting of sources within the system rather than the older method of having to manually map the sources and addresses. The AOIP systems require IGMP protocols. These are available in layer 2 and layer 3 Ethernet switches. The IGMP querier in layer 3 and now in layer 2 plus switches effectively keeps a list of the active multicast streams. IGMP snooping reads the querier and shuts down the streams not needed by the audio nodes to facilitate management of the network. Without these functions, the network would experience flooding and possibly create a denial of service condition. Basically, the IGMP protocols stop network train wrecks. Timing and sync. Timing protocols also need to be addressed, especially if the system is to sync with sources from outside the LAN. Some older systems distribute the local timing data by having a master unit multicast messages on well-known addresses at regular intervals. This is adequate for devices within the LAN, but doesn't provide any help for remote sources. Again, AES 67 calls for the use of IEEE 1588 as a timing standard for AOIP. 1588 is a standard protocol designed to lock the sample frequency and the time of day to a master clock. 1588 is by far the most accurate network timing method available today. 1588 and AES 67. Recently, since the publishing of AES 67 protocols, some patent infringement issues have arisen. It seems that one of the original participants in the development committee asserts that they have patents on some of the specifics of the AES 67 protocol. This company is not a patent troll, but rather a legitimate software developer. The patent they assert impacts AES 67 and AVB because it relates to a specific use of part of the 1588 protocol. The patent infringement issue, which was delivered right after the AES 67 was announced, last year, basically at NAB, is that the company maintains that they hold a patent on using 1588 as an media transport and everything that impacts that. Now, Greg Shea of Axia sent an open letter to Radio World basically saying that there's previous usage, that the patent won't hold up, and that you shouldn't worry about it, and certainly Axia and Ravenna and some of the other companies involved in adopting or pushing for AES 67 have gone ahead at this most recent AES convention and formed a marketing committee to promote AES 67's use. However, this is the United States, and being right doesn't prevent you from being sued. So, some manufacturers have implemented AES 67 despite the licensing demands. Other are in the hold mode on AES 67. We're a small company, we're in a hold mode. However, Logitech has been one of those companies that has advocated interoperability as a necessary goal for equipment manufacturers since our introduction of the Jetstream line of networked audio products. Because of these patent issues, as well as other requirements of the networking and broadcast, which are not covered by AES 67 standards, such as discovery and control, it doesn't look like AES 67 will be the total answer for the broadcaster in the immediate future. AES 67 is great. It specifies the RTP protocols. It specifies the timing standard that needs to be used. It specifies the packet size. It specifies a lot of stuff. It does not specify discovery. It does not specify control. So there's a lot of signals out there which you can't find and you can't control even if you could find them. So AES 67 is not the total answer. That being the case, in an effort to advance the cause of interoperability and connectivity, we signed a license agreement with Axxia and are now including Axxia LiveWire in all of the Jetstream and products. We believe that Axxia's work on creating a group of companies which can communicate with each other has been amazing, and we're certainly glad to be able to take advantage of it. Small node architecture, this is what we're really here to talk about. Multiple small, low-capacity, source-specific nodes placed throughout the system. A single studio may have four or five small audio nodes. These small nodes are typically 32 channels, but some are even smaller. These clustered nodes are connected to low-capacity local edge switches. A typical studio might look like this. So you have your local edge switch, and all of the local nodes are connected into the edge switch, including the console driver and the GPIs and everything else. So you have a system per studio, which kind of looks like that. The edge switches then connect to a central core switch. So an edge and core network design needs to be maintained. If you look at the small node distribution in AOIP, it negatively affects the source delay, the course, and the complexity of the system. Each of the studios with an edge switch needs to connect to a core switch. The rack room has to have an edge switch, or probably has to have an edge switch, which then connects to the core switch. The audio server room has nodes which then connect to the source switch. So basically what you've got is a complex edge and core system where audio is routed through edges into the core, back to the edges, and out again. Every time you go through a switch, you add the delay. Is it noticeable? I don't know. I'm being told by some people that their people can't hear it, but nevertheless, when Orband first came out with the first digital DSP on-air processor, it had a delay of around 10 milliseconds, and they maintained that nobody could hear it, yet everybody complained about it. Well, all of the announcers complained about it because it basically created a flanging condition in their headphones. So where does the delay start to impact your audio routing? Obviously, depending upon the facility, it could be different each time, but certainly documentation shows that every time you go through a switch, you add time. Dense node architecture, which is basically what we use in a Jetstream, a single dense node in each studio. Logitech dense nodes are 64, 120, 128, and of the last NAB, we have introduced a 240 channel node. The dense node accepts all audio I/O in a single node for each studio. Mic level, analog line, AES, and even HDSDI exist in the same node. No edge switch is required in a studio. Each studio dense node connects directly to the single core switch. Logitech Jetstreams are a hybrid of TDM and RTP streaming, which is how we can do this. The local audio is mixed locally on a TDM bus. Audio that needs to be shared with other units is networked via AOIP. We think this is the most efficient method of mixing audio, the best of both worlds. The hybrid node architecture is what allows us to develop nodes with densities up to 240 channels. For those of you who want to see the math, the typical bandwidth required for a bonded stereo pair is 2.6 megabits. The low latency signals, it approaches 2.9, so let's use 3. You can get 330 channels on a gigabyte port. Dense node system architecture. Notice no edge switches. Each studio has just one jet stream. Everything feeds the jet stream goes to a core switch. So in a four studio application with a rack room, we've probably reduced your cost by 5 edge switches, which if you're using Cisco is probably in the range of $15,000. And we put in fewer nodes, which makes the interconnection scheme simpler. The simpler design yields lower complexity and lower cost. It also yields lower delay. What does this mean? Simpler, easier setup, lower cost, easier administration, simpler, more direct system architecture, lower throughput delay, and here's the jet stream. The jet stream's been out for about maybe 5 years. You notice we basically have a group of audio cards. We tailor the system to the individual studio. The Jetstream Mini is 64 or 128 channels, depending upon the type of audio cards you choose. It has an embedded microprocessor, which manages some of the monitoring for the system and allows connection through a browser interface. The AOIP audio networking has dual redundant gigabyte ports. So we basically have developed a failover networking platform for you. If you take the two ports, connect them to two core switches, we basically manage it. If one source disappears, we'll pick it up from the other networking position. This is the unit we introduced at NAB. It's a 240-channel node. It's designed for TOCs and rack rooms, applications anywhere where a lot of audio is required in a small amount of space. Basically, this is the inside. It's got the same type of audio processing as the smaller Jetstream Mini. It's got 24 mix-minus buses. It's got effects. It's got dynamics processing, profanity or subframe delay, and much more. The Plus can power any of Logitech's control surfaces, including the Artisan. It has internal redundant power supplies fed by dual mains and redundant gigabit network ports. We also have added SDI capability into the Jetstream Plus, so that basically you can take embedded audio and feed it in directly. You don't have to de-embed before you get there. And that's the new node designed for television applications because of the SDI and also, as I said, for rack rooms. Why buy Logitech? We give you a nice warm and fuzzy feeling. Any questions? Yes.
There's the other system out there is Dante, which has discovery and control.
Yes.
Compare and contrast that with
I don't AES know enough about Dante to be able to do that, unfortunately. Okay. It's one of those systems which we actually do run into because we have a lot of consoles at the ABC in Australia, and the ABC uses StageTech consoles for their performance studios and their larger facilities, and they use Logitech for their radio facilities. Dante, my understanding about Dante is that it's actually similar to AVB, or in many ways. But the only reason I say that is because SAS is committed to AVB as their audio interface. They don't like the RTP stream. They don't really like AES-67. SAS had adopted Dante a couple of years ago. So I'll have to assume that that's because it fits in their system. Unfortunately, that's really the most I can tell you about it. I don't really know a lot about Dante. Yes?
Do these products have control assigned to them, such as GPI?
Yes. Or,
and how are they as far as latency in relationship to the audio?
The latency in our system Probably because it, I guess the answer is it depends on where you're going. If you're in a networked application where you're trying to start something that's in another room, if you're using the low latency settings for the audio, then it would be almost the start would lead the audio only by microseconds. If you're talking about in the studio, then it's instantaneous because our audio in a jet stream is all TDM. So we're talking about 50 microseconds of typical delay in both the audio and the start commands.
And then the second question is how do the protocol suites survive routing?
I'm sorry, how does...
Do they survive a pass through a router?
Yes. Everything passes through the router. It's a full implementation of IP networking. So control, audio, and discovery exist. And the same can be said with the implementation of LiveWire. Our LiveWire implementation is a full implementation of LiveWire, so it also deals with control and with audio and discovery. So through the LiveWire, almost everybody can take advantage of the fact that discovery is available. With AES-67, at the moment, discovery is not a part of it. Okay, thank you very much. This year we're serving a nice Barbera, so stop by the booth.